demanded an urgent and horrifying news story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now, this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
All right, top story of the day. The Broncos have given the soon-to-be-released Russell Wilson permission to immediately begin speaking and meeting with other teams in their home cities, sources told ESPN's Adam Schefter on Wednesday. The Broncos announced Monday that they informed Wilson that he'd be released, and then, of course, now, hey, you can go talk to teams. Is that the norm, though, Angel? Because if you're going to be released anyway. Like, it'd be a really cold thing to say you got to wait until March 13th or whatever. Like, that would be a really cold thing. So as much as, you know, we've been battling who's the bad guy in all this, Russell Wilson or the Broncos, this isn't like really a, hey, thanks Broncos. I don't know. It just feels like, what would they stand to gain? What would the Broncos stand to gain? I'm seriously asking. By not letting him talk to other teams. I would imagine, folks, because again, this is worth noting, Angel, whoever signs him, if they sign him, whenever, whatever they sign him for will go against what the Broncos owe him on that $39 million. So if he signs for a league minimum, which is, I don't know, $2 million, something, that would count against what they owe him. So isn't that kind of like the sooner the better on that side? Seriously. I don't know. This is the top story because I don't understand why it's really a story. And I'm asking the question, like, why is this big news today?
Yes. So when a player is released, their contract with the team is terminated and they are still due any guaranteed money remaining on the deal. So rather than, you know, if you don't franchise tag somebody and you haven't officially released them, but you're let them go test out free agency is the term. They can go test it out. Hey, this team offered me this much. Can you guys match it?
Right.
Nope. Okay.
Yeah.
But for Russell, it's I can go whoever wants to sign me.
Yeah, you're done. So, I mean, again, I just found it interesting that this was a story. That this was the reason it's the top story to me because I'm scratching my head at it going, you released him. There's no chance of him coming back. This isn't a restricted free agent or not what restricted free agent, excuse me. This isn't anything like that. This is flat out, you're done here. I mean, they could be really cold and heartless and say, no, you got to wait. You can't. We're going to say no. You can't talk to anybody. I thought maybe they would wait to release him as long as they possibly could so that he couldn't talk to anybody. But them making the decision earlier this week, or I guess on Monday afternoon, I just thought, obviously, he can start talking now. You know, you got free agency that technically starts, what, next week, Angel? Maybe that's what it is. Because he can't sign with anybody until next week, but I guess they can be laying the foundation for that. They can be laying the groundwork for that. So I don't really see how the Broncos are coming in, you know. Thanks, Denver. You're allowing him to talk to people. How about this one, though? Carl Mecklenburg. Stud. Denver Bronco. Ring of Famer. Tweeted this out last night. With the picture of Russ in his orange Broncos uniform, all caps, got cut. He wrote, Russell Wilson isn't a leader. The foolishness that went on in his first year at Denver with a private coach, his own office at the facility, and a family at training camp when other players didn't have those privileges proved his self-centeredness. And so these are the things I've been talking about. That a lot of you guys out there that listen to this show or following the story along, just you want to forgive, and I get forgiveness, okay, great. But you just want to forget all of the nonsense that came in. And if you say, well, was it Hackett? Russ took advantage of that. He still took advantage of a rookie head coach, and that is a jerk move. So we can sit here and we can talk about how, well, you know, Hackett was the one in control. He should have never let it get this far. No, at the end of the day, Russ is a veteran in this league. And he made the decision to, all right, I'm going to get all the things that I've ever wanted. I'm going to get an office. Which, it was Jerry, I always mistake this, it was Jerry Rosberg who came in when he was the coach's coach, when Hackett was gone and then Rosberg took over as interim. He was the one who put an end to the office at the end of the season because even he saw it. He's never been a head coach. He said, hey, no, it's not right, man. You shouldn't have asked nice guy Nathaniel Hackett for this. This is terrible. Then, yeah, I blame Nathaniel Hackett for most of that. Yes, he allowed it to happen. You're the head coach. You have to control it. Just like a fight going on right behind his face. He didn't do anything to correct that. He just let it happen. He's not innocent in this. He's a terrible head coach. I would, you know, when Josh McDaniel screwed up with the Broncos, I actually believed that, you know, with some more, with him maybe maturing over the next few years, he might make for a good head coach. I was wrong. He didn't mature. And then obviously he was terrible for the Raiders. Hackett, I don't get that sense at all. Do you? Do you really get a sense that Hackett's going to go on and maybe redeem himself and be a decent head coach someday? There's no real sense of that. So I get it. Hackett was awful. Terrible move to hire him. That was where this whole thing started. But Russ took advantage of that. What do you think about a former Bronco coming out, or a former player coming out with that much fire? I mean, I, for one, like it. It's juice. Gives us something to talk about. And I agree with him. Although some people disagree, Angel, with the third take here. Having the family at training camp when other players didn't have those privileges. I read a story this morning. I can't remember where it was from. It was a Denver media outlet. They basically said, Ciara? She's a celebrity. So that kind of makes sense. They basically put it that way. That because she's a pop singer and that stuff, she should be given different privileges at practice and training camp than the rest of the families. I say no, sir. I say no to that. She should not be given that. So are all 3 points valid? Absolutely. He wanted his private coach because apparently the Broncos coaches aren't good enough. How do you think the quarterback's coach for the Broncos felt knowing that Russ brought his own guy in? And then his players felt, who seemed to love him today and yesterday with the whole, you know, let's do the signal, the crossed finger signal that we might get out of here too. Hopefully we're next. Tim Patrick kind of started that, Hunger Games style. And then you have the, hey, during camp, Ciara got to come and be at practice all the time with the family, with the kids, when you looked around, and I wasn't Adam, but you heard it from different reports and dialogues that none of the other players got that. That's not leadership, Angel. You see the old, is it a meme? Is it a picture? It always shows leadership, and it shows the stick figure pulling the sled with all the other employees on the sled, and he's pulling it. And then it says not leadership or opposite of leadership. And it shows the stick figure boss on the sled whipping the people to pull it. I'm not saying Russ was the guy whipping people, but it wasn't, hey, I'm going to be deeper in the trenches than you are. Maybe he worked out harder. He certainly told us about it. But the idea that he was deeper in the trenches and, hey, I'm going to be the one that takes it more so than you guys. Yeah, he certainly took the criticism. But the fact that he wanted an office away from everybody, doesn't that just tell you that he is screaming, I am different. I am different than you. Should Carl Mecklenburg have tweeted this out because it was a year ago? And I think that that is part of the story. People are trying to write off that part of the story.
I don't see it that way. I see it more of the first year is the only year. And nothing that happened this year really counted or mattered towards it. He didn't have the office this year. He didn't have all the extra stuff this season. Yeah, because he couldn't, right. But also, he improved because of that. And from what I see is, okay, he's bad in year one. He improved in year two. But year one's the only one that really mattered.
No, year two
matters. Year one was bad.
Year two matters. Year two matters. But what I'm saying is people are acting as if year one doesn't matter. And you're feeling like, maybe from my point, is that year two doesn't matter. But I've seen enough people say, he was improved. Look at his stats. They were much better. He didn't have the office. He didn't have the quarterback thing. That's because Sean Payton came in and said, this is a toddler. This is a child trying to come in here and pretend he's boss. No. We're not doing that crap. So thank goodness you had an adult come in and say, you don't get that crap. Because if you had Hackett again, it'd be the same junk over and over again. He'd still have the office. The let's ride thing that he finally gave up at the end. Hey, threes. Like, those were all things that I said at the beginning weren't as bad as they seemed. But when you fast forward to where we are now, it's self-centered. The podcast he did is self-centered.
Well, I never thought the let's ride thing was, like, a thing. I think that was just, like, the camera crew that does the graphics for in-game stuff was getting Russell to do that, and it just became a meme. It became a joke.
See, no, that's Russ's thing. He came up with that. That was his deal. Let's ride. That was his catchphrase, because in Seattle, it was go Hawks. It was go Hawks every time. So he needed another catchphrase, and so it was let's ride. It couldn't just be go Broncos. It couldn't just be go Seahawks. It had to be his thing. Hey, threes, let's ride. You know, all those things. He needed to separate himself. And great quarterbacks separate themselves based on what they do on the field. And we talked to Hugh Millen yesterday. If you guys don't remember him, he played in the NFL for 10 years. He was a backup to John Elway. His son played at CSU for a bit. He's now in Florida. Hugh told us yesterday, covering Russ, something changed the last 2 years while he was at Seattle. And Hugh was pretty to the point and said it seemed like it happened once he got married or started dating Sierra. That maybe that he started to build up his own image bigger than the team that he was on, and even the radio guy sensed it. Like, he's not the same guy to interview anymore. He's a little goofier than he used to be out in public, but then when you get him in for a conversation, it's very robotic, it's very cold, and that's kind of what Hugh told us yesterday. So I think you have to take the body of work, the last 2 years, and the real thing is, the only reason we didn't see the same crap this year as we saw last year was because Sean Payton didn't allow it. Every not-so-subtle remark that Sean Payton made about the Broncos was about Russell Wilson, was about, hey, we need to be silent donors. Nobody else was doing what Russ was doing. Did you see Cortland Sutton putting out Subway commercials and Subway Twitter account videos and workout videos? I mean, Jerry Jeudy hasn't done that since he was in the draft. Did you see Justin Simmons doing stuff like that? Nobody did that except Russ. But Sean Payton came in and said, no, we're going to be more silent donors. That was about Russ. The office, that's not happening. Again, about Russ. So I actually believe that if it wasn't for Sean Payton, we would have seen the same garbage on the field and off the field with Russ. You had to have somebody come in that knew how to lead a football team. And part of leading a football team is not giving in to the stupid asks of your stars. Big Hub. So let's ride is why everyone dislikes him? What if he never said that? Then it would be the high knees on the plane. Then it would be the Wolverine blood. Then it would be the office. Then it would be the quarterback's coach. Then it would be pulling up. And I didn't have a problem with this at all at the time, right? He pulled up in his gigantic car, big Jeep thing, Jeep pickup truck semi thing, already in uniform. That rubbed people the wrong way, too, because they're like, here comes this guy. And I actually liked it. I was like, he's ready for work. There was a lot of that stuff that I had no problem with.
I don't get the quarterback's coach thing. Just don't. Most NFL quarterbacks have their own coach.
They probably have their own guy that works with them at home when they're off season, a guy that guides them and counsels them, but that's on the phone by themselves. You don't bring them to work. They don't get a desk in your office where they can sit and analyze tape. He's not on the payroll. I mean, the idea that, hey, the Broncos hired a quarterback's coach to be here every day to watch film, to go through what we're going through on a daily basis when it's the coaches' meetings. Russell Wilson's quarterback's coach was never a part of any of those. You're not on the payroll. But yet he's here to be he's the one that you really side with. You know, he's the one that you're listening to. That's offsetting. That's off-putting, I should say. When you're a head coach of an organization and you hire all the coaches that you believe are going to preach your message, and then you got this rogue guy that shows up and sits in Russ's office and they go through plays, what's that about? You don't find anything wrong with that.
No, I just didn't understand the full context of it, I guess. I assume that most quarterbacks have a personal quarterback's coach that they work with that does off-season training stuff with them.
Most of them, I would say, work with the quarterback's coach that's hired by the team. I would, to be fair. I mean, I remember Tom Brady, not that Leftwich was the quarterback's coach, but he was the offensive coordinator for the Buccaneers. Tom would show up at his place and they would go over stuff. So I would imagine to keep things all on the same page, I'm talking to the quarterback's coach that also knows Sean Payton or Nathaniel Hackett. He knows what he wants. But when you bring a guy in that's your own guy, your own trainer. Did you ever see the movie Braveheart? Never saw a movie? I've been doing this a lot this week, relating things to pop culture and cinema. Braveheart. You had King Richard, whatever. I don't remember the number. He's talking about running and you know, winning the war and all this stuff and, you know, owning Scotland and all that stuff. And his son, who he's grooming to be the next king, has his person, and we'll just leave it at that, who's constantly with him, follows him around, supporting him. He's his guy. Finally, the king gets enough of it, and this guy, like, jumps. The prince's friend says, hey, no, why would you do that? That's terrible tactics, to the king. And the king says, who is this person who acts as if I needed his advice? And then he throws him out the window. That is what I think of when I think of the quarterback's coach for Russell Wilson. You don't belong here. You're not a part of my round table. You're not a part of this system here. Who are you to come here to our facility, sit in an office, enjoy our perks, counsel Russell Wilson, which might be combative toward our goals? So that was awful. But yeah, maybe other, you know, I'm sure players in the NFL, they all have their personal trainers. They all have their guys that are outside of the, you know, facility that they work with on a daily basis. They hire a chef. Those don't have to be approved by the team. But the idea that you bring your quarterback's coach, assistant, to the facility, to work in your office, it's outrageous. Texter, maybe that came with the major trade the Broncos did for Russ, and he was able to do all this, but it wasn't disclosed to us. Which should also be, if that was true, that in the contract, I need to have my own office. I need to have my own quarterback coach. I don't care if you guys approve him or not. He's my guy, and I need to have a spot for him. And my wife can come to every practice. If that was in the contract, then you should be firing George Payton yesterday. He should probably be fired anyway. But the idea that these things are just okay? Hell, dude, the Patriots didn't even want Tom Brady's dietitian around. Like, Belichick was not crazy, but they didn't want him around the facility. Because it's like, you don't work here. If you're on the payroll and you're part of this organization, come here and enjoy the team. Watch the practices. You're part of the Ring of Fame and all that stuff. But you don't get to sit in our film room when we're discussing what's going to truly make our team better. And so, I again, last year, 2 years ago was awful. This year was better. But that's because Sean Payton, if we want to talk about whether Sean Payton's good or bad, yet to be seen. We'll see what he does with the Broncos without, you know, we have yet to see Sean Payton be a successful coach without Drew Brees. But I will say, he followed up with Rosberg's, you know, act of saying no more office, and he put the hammer down. And he said, no more of this junk, man. And then, yeah, he was hypocritical, and that bothered me. The red flags still exist for Sean Payton. Zero question in my mind. And in 2 years, we could be going back to this stuff saying, here's where it started with Sean Payton. He didn't handle Russell Wilson extremely well. He shouldn't have been so outward on it. Sean shouldn't have been. He shouldn't have talked to the media the way he did about Russ. I don't like that. I just would have liked to know that it was all cleaned up. And I think Sean wanted people to know, we're not putting up with that stuff anymore. If we're going to find success between me and Russell Wilson, we're going to eliminate all of the extra garbage. So you don't have to ignore the most recent year, but it's still fair to, you have to take the body of work, the two seasons. One of them, Russ took extreme advantage of a rookie head coach that didn't know what the hell he was doing. The next year, Sean Payton came in and played boss man and said, no, you're not doing any of that crap. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. When we come back, well, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to catch up with Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffs. The Buffs are red hot. We'll get into that in just a moment. But we'll take a short break right now. Whole show powered by Chevron, Northern Colorado's voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Start your day with Good Morning NoCo with Brian, Gary, and Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Sean Keeler of the Denver Post. You're listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into the show. Also coming up, Angel, in the buy or sell, one of the topics will be Nick Saban. Was he just getting tired? Was he just getting tired of young people? Was he just tired of the new age of college football? We're going to get into that story because I think that's a good one as well. When he speaks, people tend to listen up. 31 minutes after the hour. Angel, we got a couple things going on with the Avs right now. Trade deadline in the NHL is Friday.
Yes, the Avs have made two trades in the last 20 minutes or so. First one, they have acquired defenseman Sean Walker and a fifth-round pick in the 2026 draft from the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for forward Ryan Johansson and a first-round pick in 2025, as well as trading Bowen Byram to Buffalo for Casey Mittelstadt.
A lot of these decisions right now, they're still trying to find that person to replace Kadri. Nazem Kadri, they just haven't been able to find, you know, that guy that could come in and produce the way he was able to produce. So that's kind of probably the thinking right now, still trying to find that replacement. And I think it's, you know, smart for the Avs to be looking to try to better the situation before the trade deadline, because I don't know if they're the odds-on favorite right now.
No, and then another update on Valeri Nichushkin. He, of course, exited the player assistance program on Monday, and he's been cleared to practice. He has been practicing, but it's not likely for him to play tonight. But he is, I'd imagine, close to being back with the team.
Hmm. You got to wonder about that situation, too. Like, how sensitive is that? Is there still, I mean, you got to wonder if it's going to something's going to come up again. Because we had it twice now. One was in the playoffs, and one just recently this regular season. 32 minutes after the hour. Angel, before we break, I got to register somebody. We won't do trivia. I don't have enough time. Just do caller number 5, $1,000. You want to win $1,000? You want to get in our bracket challenge, our March Madness bracket challenge. All you got to do is give Angel your email, and you're in. If you're caller number 5, that's it. And you are right there in the mix. Make sure you fill out that bracket by the deadline, and you can win $1,000. If you're the winning bracket, $1,000 is yours. Caller 5, 970-353-1310. That's the First Advantage hotline, 970-353-1310. Caller number 5, 33 after the hour. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Sefa Lufau, former Colorado Buffaloes quarterback, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KSKA.
Just 37 minutes after the hour. Welcome back in to the whole show on this really beautiful March 6th day. Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, joining us now. Mark, I mean, man, the Buffs, all they've been doing since the last couple of weeks in our conversations, all they've been doing is winning, putting themselves in a great spot to sneak into the big dance.
You know, you use the word sneak. And the way things are being presented out there, that's exactly what it would be. And Brady, I've been doing this for 35 years, and apparently I don't understand college basketball at all. I don't think I understand any of it. The Buffs had won 4 in a row by an average of about 15 points per game. Joe Lunardi has them drop. Their net number continue to go up. They're at number 30. Joe Lunardi has them drop from the last 4 out to the next 4 out, and has them behind Utah, who has got a worse record than Colorado, a worse net number, and they just beat by 24 points. I don't understand college basketball at all. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know how it works anymore. We've got a bunch of analysts out there and data nerds who are somehow in control of this thing, and I just don't understand it. I mean, it's fascinating to me.
No, I'm there with you on a lot of that. I don't get it. And, you know, I get the whole quad one wins, and you're building your resume, and we're factoring in the KenPom stuff. Like I try to pretend I know a little bit about that stuff, but I don't understand how you could fall at all, because the last four games have done nothing but tell you that, yeah, the Buffs are probably a team that should be dancing. I don't know how you can lose faith in that the last four, especially the last 2 weeks.
And then the thing about it is, people say, well, their quad four record isn't great. Well, they've had, I think, is it two or three quad one wins, and now have become non-quad one wins. So they drop out. Okay, well, that has to do with the opposition, not with Colorado.
Yeah.
Right, and so that's the issue. Well, so if it's all about quad one wins, why do we worry about the net then? Why don't we just say we're going to watch quad one and quad, just watch the quad victories and say the team's got a better record in quad one than they unseat somebody who's got a worse record. So what's the point of the net then? I was told when the RPI went away and we went to the net, this was the deal. Oh, we got it all figured out now. And you've got teams in there with far worse net numbers, teams in the 40s, who apparently are sitting ahead of Colorado, and I'm like, well, what was the point of? I thought that was the measuring stick now, and so yeah, I don't know. But you know, listen, here's the good news. Colorado just has to go tomorrow night and win it in Eugene, Oregon, against I don't know what Oregon's is now, 65, 66, somewhere right in that range, and then take care of Oregon State, and then they probably don't have to worry about it. But it's just very confusing to me.
No, I try to get in on it as much as I possibly can. Mark, there was a time, quite a few years ago when I was doing this show, where I was kind of like, all right, get to 20 wins. That's the first step. And, yeah, I get it. They can't all be, beat, 18 teams nobody knows, or just 15 teams that are just terrible in your conference. I get that. But I always kind of thought 20 wins, that's the must. Let's get to 20 wins. And then we're going to look at those 20 wins. And some of those are good. Some of them are going to be bad. Some of them were good at the times. Whatever. That's what's also weird to me, because – the teams, and I'll use this one, Mark, for Colorado State, and I believe they're going to get in. But they beat, they had some big wins early in the season in the non-conference schedule.
Right.
Well, Mark, in every other sport, especially in the pros, I'm always told that you want to be playing your best whatever at the end of the season, your last month or two. So I always find it interesting that we base so much off of what teams did in the first 4 weeks of the season when, theoretically, they're not supposed to be playing their best, whatever that sport is.
Well, let's put it this way, and I think you're absolutely onto something here. Let's put it this way. So if you're objectively going to sit down and analyze the University of Colorado, okay, you look at them and you say, okay, they're already 20-9. Let's say they end up 21-10 on the end of the regular season. Let's say they get a split this weekend. All right? That's a pretty darn good record. They also have been all season long one of the five most injured teams in the country. What I mean by that is they've played, I think it's 16 or 17 games now, without at least one or more of their top seven players, and yet they put together this kind of record. They also have a guy that is probably going to be an All-American in KJ Simpson, playing as well as anybody in the country right now. They've also got a guy who was a preseason All-American. You've also got a guy that is allegedly a top five draft pick in the NBA and a McDonald's All-American in Cody Williams, who's missed 11 or 12 games by this point in time. And so you've got a marquee team, a team that has been very good, has overcome enormous adversity in terms of injuries this season, has put together some very nice wins, has got some marquee players. Those are the kind of things, and playing its best basketball at the end of the season, those are the kind of things you want to see in the NCAA tournament. And that's why it's confusing to me. I'm looking at this team going, well, this is a tournament team. I've been around this a long time. I've seen tournament teams. It is a tournament team. They've gotten blown out twice this season. Arizona is a bad matchup for Colorado. They don't match up. Otherwise, every game, they're in it. They're in the middle of it. They've lost some heartbreakers. In my view, this is, and I'm saying this objectively, not just because I do the games. I've been around this far too long and know what a tournament team looks like. Colorado's a tournament team.
I feel like you're right. I really do. I mean, you watch this team, and again, what they were able to do the last couple of games, beating USC on the road, home against Utah, smoked them there. pretty relative ease. Didn't give up the collapse against Cal this time around. Yep. And then you handled Stanford. But I guess at the end of the day, like you said, Mark, you go win one or two more games, and maybe we don't even have to have the debate.
Right. Yeah, and my guess is that'll happen because I think they're playing that well. I think this Oregon matchup, they beat them earlier this season by, 15 or 16 points. I think they've got a real good shot of winning tomorrow night. Oregon is a very good offensive team and not a very – they're one of the worst defensive teams in the Pac-12, so they got a great opportunity there. I am hoping at this point – I haven't talked to Tad today. We texted, but I didn't ask him the question. I think Cody will probably be back by tomorrow night, so you get the third wheel of the big three back. And let's hope that KJ's been playing as well season long. Let's hope Tristan has a very strong weekend on the road against the Oregon teams. And so I do think they probably get a minimum of a split. But they really, this one on the front end, well, I was going to say, if you get the one on the front end against Oregon, that's a high-level win. If you went and lost in Corvallis, that would be a bad loss. And so you don't want to do that either. So what I want to do is to go and get a sweep this weekend. And then they'd be the number three seed in the Pac-12 Conference Tournament. You get the first round bye, and you'd also most likely avoid Arizona till the title game, so they could get themselves to the Pac-12 title game and then see what happens the third time against Arizona.
Mark, I don't have the standings in front of me, but is the worst they could – what's the worst the Buffs could finish potentially here? Because they've done a pretty good job of putting themselves in a good enough spot where they should be in at least the top five at the very least.
Well, Colorado right now is tied from the record standpoint, tied at 11-7 with Oregon. And then two games back, you've got UCLA and Utah. Now, Colorado would lose the tiebreaker, I think, with both of them, if it turns out. Because, the way it works is head-to-head, in which case they split. But the other two teams got higher-level wins because they beat Arizona. I think both of them did. So they'd probably get the tiebreaker there. But you'd have to have a total collapse. What has to happen is Colorado has to get swept. Utah and UCLA have to sweep what they've got this weekend. And then you'd have the tiebreakers to come into play. But all they got to do is get one win, and they're in the top four. That's as simple as that right now. So that's all they have to do.
That I like it when it's simple like that, Mark. You just go win a game or two, and you're in. Okay, so what is it? Is it really? Is it okay? You win out regular season. You win your final two games. Is that it? You think, or do they? Do you still? I mean, again, it's going to change every week. And just like you and I were talking about Lenardi and what some of the bracketologists are putting out there, it might fluctuate. Even if we think we know 2 weeks ago, things change. So according to what maybe they're thinking, is there still work to do? Even if the Buffs finish at 22-9.
Anything, Brady. You're going to get a win against, and I haven't looked at what Oregon is today. Let's say they're 65 for conversation's sake. You get a road win against number 65 in the net, then you're going to take care of business, another road game over Oregon State, and their net's going to jump down, probably into that like 25 or 26 range. The lowest net team that has ever been left out was 35. That's the lowest, which is why I can't comprehend this idea that sitting right now at 30 that they're not in. But nonetheless, that's the lowest it's ever been left out of the NCAA tournament. So you get yourself into the 20s, and, it's got to be a guarantee that you're in. But then again, we're dealing with the NCAA, and we're dealing with the committee, and we're dealing with all the other garbage that goes on, the politics involved in it. So who knows? But I would be shocked. The Tad's first year when they got snubbed by the NCAA tournament. And then the next year, of course, they went and won the Pac-12 title the first year that they were in the league and got the automatic bid. But that year, they were the team that everyone was like, how does this team get left out? This is starting to feel like that a little bit because this is a very good basketball team that Tad has, as offensively talented as anyone he's ever had. And if it gets left out, I'm going to be just blown away, especially if they sweep this weekend.
I tend to feel the same way. I think we're starting to feel a lot stronger around here about a lot of, a handful of teams in the state going dancing. So I'm pretty excited about that. Mark, while we have you, Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffs, looking at that football schedule that came out, this is going to be a really interesting start to the season for the Buffs because you look at North Dakota State, that's an interesting one. And then you're at Nebraska and at CSU, home against Baylor. A new day, a new era for the Buffs as they switch, moving on in conferences. But that first few games, certainly going to be interesting. I'm not saying I believe it's going to go one way or the other just yet, but they're going to be, those will be games to watch out for.
Well, think think about that North Dakota State game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's my home country up there. And we know historically what North Dakota State has done over the years. They go in and beat a lot of teams. They take your money and they take your victory and go back home. And so not an easy one right off the bat against North Dakota State on August 31st. And then I think that game at Nebraska, you know what it was like this year against Nebraska in Boulder. And it was just insane, the energy that was there that day. It'll be exactly like that in Lincoln, Nebraska. You got to be the road team. And then, like you said, then you go up and play Colorado State. And what's the last time the Buffs have been up there, 96 or something like that? It's long before I've got here. I know that. And so it's been forever. And so that's going to be monstrous. And then, you know, all the fireworks that game had last year and the pregame activities and the postgame commentary and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's not an easy start to the season. And, you know, and then I was on a show a couple of days ago, and the guy's asking me about, you know, what I think of the team. And I said, I don't know again. It's the same thing as last year. We got so many new players. I have no idea how to gauge this thing. I do know what Shedeur Sanders is going to bring, and I know what Dylan Edwards is going to bring, and I know what guys like that are going to bring. But there's a lot of newness once again. And so here we go, kind of relearning the Buffaloes as we get in the spring ball here coming up in what about almost 2 weeks, I guess, March 18th.
You know, Mark, we're talking about all these coaches that have to deal with all these changes and stuff. We don't think about the broadcasters as much. You got a ton of new names that you got to learn every single year now with this transfer portal NIL mix-up thing that we have.
I hope people appreciate me slaving over a hot keyboard in my computer trying to learn all that stuff. I mean, it's akin to being an underwater welder. It's that dangerous. I mean, it's
hey, you're about to pull a Jeff Breidich there and say, hey, what general managers do in baseball? We're basically brain surgeons, right? You know, I know it's all in jest,
right.
Mark.
I'd forgotten about that.
I love that.
Awesome.
See, that's my job, to remember crap like that probably shouldn't be remembered, but it's just in there forever.
Yeah, I got to know Jeff a little bit, and God bless him and all that, but, you know, believe me, I don't take myself that seriously. Listen, life and death is not happening upon what I do on a broadcast, I guarantee you that.
Well, you know what? I think a lot of people are on, you know, the edge of their seat, though. When Mark Johnson's doing a call, I think people are ready to rock and roll. They know business is about to happen.
I appreciate that aspect of it. But, again, nothing serious is going to happen, right, one way or the other.
Mark, what time do you guys get rocking and rolling tomorrow night?
Yeah, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Mountain Time tip-off, 6:30 in the Colorado Basketball Network. And you can join us on the Varsity Network app and SiriusXM and who knows, a billion other different ways to get to us. But, yeah, dial that one up. That's going to be a high-level basketball game tomorrow night. And this one is going to be electric, I think. You want to talk about good atmosphere? I think there's a lot in the line. Oregon still believes they've got a chance to make the dance. And so there's a lot going on there, and that'll be a big game.
Yeah, no, a huge game at this stage of the season. Mark, my friend, always appreciate you. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, buddy. See you.
Mark Johnson, the voice of the Buffs. So the Buffs are kind of not in right now. There's work to do. They got to handle at least one of these, and still might want to grab some insurance there. Win both of these, win a game in the first round of the tournament, and, you know, maybe you're in. 12:51 the time. What do they get in the Pac-12? How many teams get a bye? Is it the first two that get a bye in the Pac-12 tournament? Let's get on the other side. We'll get that answer for it. It's the first four, so this would be the Buffs could finish in that top four, so that would be significant. And I think if they could do that, it's essentially like you won a game in the tournament, right? Is that how they look at it? It's a whole show. We'll be right back.
Want to win $1,000 this year? Keep it here to find out how to enter KFKA's Bracket Challenge, presented in part by Summit Spas Windsor and Fort Collins.
This is Steve Fairchild at FairchildQBTraining.com, and you are listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
I want to thank On the Rocks Liquor, always making our weekends, our evenings, whatever. Maybe the game-watching experience just a little bit better. Check them out half a mile south of Highway 34 on 47th Avenue. We've got their free wine and beer tastings happening every single Friday. Angel, you've been to a couple of sports venues in the state of Colorado. Do you have a favorite?
Ball Arena is great. I've been to a couple of Nuggets games. I've only been to one Avs game.
Have you been to a Rockies game?
I've been to several Rockies games.
Okay.
Day games, night games, whichever. I have been to Folsom Field a couple times. Yeah.
Of those, like what's the more enjoyable experience?
And I've gone to one Broncos game.
It doesn't have to be a pro team versus college team. It could be like the experience. Sure. How do you feel about the experience? I mean, I can go watch a concert at Ball Arena, but enjoy it much better at the Ogden in Denver. It's a smaller, more intimate environment, and you can enjoy the music a little bit better. So,
I mean, if they played sports at Red Rocks, that's
wouldn't that be cool? Might do ping pong or something. That'd be kind of, set that board up there, and away you go, that table.
It's an idea.
What's better? Just like, let me give me the experience, but also the venue. Like, mix, don't mix the two.
I would go with Coors Field.
Yeah.
I have a lot of fun there, games. You know you're going to be there for a number of hours, and, you know, all the different food, the people. You can watch the game. You don't have to watch the game. If it's a nice day out, it's just nice to be out there, and hey, maybe the Rockies win the game.
Who cares? We're here to get a suntan. All right, let's talk about that. I want to get your thoughts on this because, again, it can be the experience to you, too. It doesn't need to be the fanciest. I mean, Moby Arena is not the nicest arena there is. It's just kind of what they've built in there is exciting and makes for a fun experience. All right, we got buy or sell coming up next. Don't go anywhere.